Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Ducks fans. Where and whenever you're watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you stories from your favorite current and former Oregon athletes. And we give you never before heard stories from, you know, a lot of people. But this week, hey, it's our first time in a long time and we've got a lot to talk about. So no guest this week, but with me, all as always, is my trusty co-host, Samuel Chidrick Schmidt. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Nick. I'm excited to talk some football. I know that there's a lot going on in everybody's lives, but I know the one thing we all have in common is some Ducks football, and I'm ready to talk about it.
Absolutely. And I want to thank all our fans out there because, man, there's been so much support, even though we've been dead quiet ever since our championship game episode for pretty good reasons. I think it took a long time to really process that second Utah loss, kind of get to where we are today, but we're going to sit here and talk through our first podcast of this, season four for us. And if this is your first episode, or if you've stuck around with us from day one, episode one, we want to thank you for joining us. And we hope we make it worth your while because, man, we have a lot to talk about. Now, first and foremost, where we ended the last episode was going into the second game against Utah in Vegas. And to be honest with you, Sam, I've still never watched that full game. I've seen the highlights, I've seen the lowlights, and there are very few highlights for Oregon in that game, unfortunately. And after that, as we all know, the departure of Mario Cristobal to Miami was awfully hard for a lot of the fan base to understand and accept and process. But here we are today. It's game week. We're going into Atlanta to play Georgia. And we have Coach Dan Lanning, who comes from winning a national title with Georgia last year and being their defensive coordinator. So I'm not so sure there's a better position we could be in with a new coach. But man, what a tumultuous way we got here. And I can't wait to hear how you process it and what your feelings were on not just the bowl game and the coaching change, but overall what you've seen from this team in the long time we've been off.
Well, Nick, I think we can both say that at the end of last season, there were a lot of feelings from everybody, a lot of feelings from Duck fans, a lot of feelings from people within the program, outside of the program. And I think that a lot of those feelings have changed as to this moment right here, right? I think that after the championship game loss, and more specifically, I think even after taking that loss as well to Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl, a game that really Oregon was never very close in at all. It was a game that from the jump, Oklahoma really just had the advantage. You could tell they were going to run away with it, and they absolutely did. But Oregon did some things over those weeks that showed that there might be something for the future, and going out and making a big hire like Dan Lanning was exactly what Duck fans needed to see. Oregon needed to be aggressive. They needed to be innovative. They needed to get after it. They made a big splash the last time they went out to look for a new coach and bringing in Willie Taggart. Although it didn't go well necessarily, well, it was fine. It led to a staff that built some terrific culture for the university and for the program. It was another splashy hire, and it was a hire that I think Oregon fans have come to expect the Ducks to try to make. This is a top-tier program. It's a top-tier brand in college football. And I think Oregon is continuing to pursue that while also pushing the narrative that they're not just going to be another West Coast team caught up in this shuffle of teams and conferences. They are a brand. They are a name. And the Oregon Ducks are here to stay.
Yeah, and getting into that topic a little bit, during the coaching search, I mean, that some will delve into a lot more, but there was the talk of Justin Wilcox getting the offer, coming on as coach. We'll someday find the real truth behind that. It's been reported from different sources that Wilcox turned down the job. But to be honest, I think there would be a large contingent of Duck fans that would be seriously upset with that hire, even though it is technically, you know, like a historic family hire. But I think a lot of that concern is that the Ducks are fans in general are so worried about another coach using this as a stepping stone program and that becoming kind of the general aura or the presence of Oregon in the media. And having that become a running storyline would be a problem. But also, to get to the top, man, unless you're going to be in the playoffs every year, you can't blame a coach for going and trying to find a more advantageous position, especially going back home like Taggart to Florida State or, you know, Mario to Miami. Now, it's difficult how he left, especially when we look back and we review it and we look back at both Utah games and essentially how last episode we kind of left saying we have a lot we can correct, a lot we can change. And then we see in the championship game, we didn't really change anything. We talked a lot last season continually about trying to anticipate when we were going to add more to the offense. And if anything, it felt like we were continuing to take away from the passing game until that bowl game when we saw it open up a lot. And in the NFL preseason, we've seen a lot of guys that we didn't fully utilize here under the Crystal Ball era that I am more optimistic that Dan Lanning will use more of the roster, because it started to feel like the favoritism under the previous staff for certain players and giving them reps instead of trying to rotate guys in got to be a big problem towards the end of the year. And when you look at the stat sheet and our leading receiver being a running back, that just shows you exactly kind of the problems that I think systemically we had under the Crystal Ball era that really didn't, you know, rear their ugly heads quite so much until 2020. And then this last season.
It's true. And to put a bow on the Crystal Ball era, the last time that I'll probably dive too deeply into it on this podcast specifically, I will say that you got four seasons with two BCS bowl berths or two New Year's Six bowl berths, a Rose Bowl win. That's a successful 4 years right there. So for Mario Cristobal, I have to give a round of applause. It's very solid, dude, very solid for the program. And I think that if nothing else, what was absolutely installed is a degree of toughness that Oregon football may have never really had before. And I think that that air of toughness and that way of being both on and off the field is something that will translate so well to the culture that is being brought in at this moment.
I agree with that to a level, but the tumultuous way this ended also leaves such a sour taste in my mouth and makes me wonder so much about the mentality of the team and where it was and how much of some of the rhetoric that was said in press conferences, how much of that toughness was actually true in a mental way. We are definitely a physically tough team, but you could tell that we are not necessarily a mentally tough team. We would not handle adversity very well. And when we got down, we didn't dig ourselves out of holes. At Stanford, we came pretty close. And I think, you know, with a couple different calls, it's a different game. But I mean, even then, it to put yourself in that hole with everything going on, obviously. But hey, you know, putting a wrap on that season and, you know, the overall tenure, it was upgrade for the program in a different way. And I'm biased as an offensive lineman. I love seeing us come out, be more tough, run the ball. But what I've seen so far in the Lanning era, and I've had, you know, the privilege of seeing a little bit more than most people as an alum, I'm excited. And I can't wait, not just for the Georgia game, but especially Eastern Washington and BYU, my friend. I wanted to give that a mention because that week we are going to be honoring the 2010 team I was a part of. We finally get to go in the Hall of Fame, baby. And
I see the shirt you're wearing.
Exactly. So I didn't just wear this to channel the intentional chi of what I hope for this season. But man, it's going to be great seeing a lot of those guys again. Going to talk to a lot of them to try and get them on Once a Duck, and actually have a few lined up in a couple weeks. But very excited for that game. I hope I can see all of you there. And if you aren't going to the game afterwards, Ranchito Grill, we are hosting an open mic stand up night with yours truly, my friend Noah. Get out there if you can make it out. But after the game, I believe 6:30, whenever it works out, but I'll keep everyone posted on social media. But the thing is I think about toughness and it can be a lot of different ways. And the thing is I wish we had the reliance on the toughness of our depth in the previous years, because you look at, you know, especially with our running backs and the distribution of carries, I think with a lot of the reps that we saw in our DBs, defensive front. And I mean, look at DJ Johnson playing both sides of the football when clearly, like, he is a defensive phenom. You should have him out there at where he impacts the field the most. But just because of trust, rep distribution, age, you know, it, whatever the multitude of things was, organizational chart, as we used to say, used to not really tell all the tales of what we saw on game day. And it was really a lot of main players getting a lot of the reps. And that doesn't always work out because you don't toughen your second guys who got to get up there when those, you know, your first line gets hurt. And those reps, you can find great moments to put a player in a great position to make a play, even if they aren't fully there in terms of, you know, maybe the playbook on the offensive or defensive side of the football. And I just don't think we saw enough of that, especially with the guys we see transferring out, like our Florida State transfers. I mean, Pittman going and, you know, basically like getting career numbers almost in his first game, you know, not against a great team. And then the Benson being able to, you know, like break as many tackles as he did, that he set like a recent record for Florida State. So those are just things you got to start, you know, realizing and taking into account as we put a wrap on that Mario Cristobal era. Is there will be repercussions for this, you know, and I think Dan Lanning is doing the best he can to kind of steer the narrative out of Oregon just being this limited team. And even with that, not giving an organizational chart, depth chart, all of that, keeping everything kind of, you know, close to the chest. I really like that strategy. I really appreciate that from a coach, and it makes me appreciate Lanning a lot more right off the bat.
Well, I think this Dan Lanning era is going to be so exciting to watch. I think that something that is so exciting is how much youth there is in that building now, within the coaching staff, within the amount of new guys, youth just to the program. Maybe they're not guys that are completely the absolute youngest, greenest down that you can find, but they're people that are new to the Oregon program and bring a new level of excitement, a new energy. I know we're going to get into talking about more personnel things in a little bit, but I'm so excited to talk about some of these transfers that are coming in, some of the big guys in the middle, some of the people out wide. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what this team has to bring. I love Lanning's approach as a defensive guy. I love, obviously, what he was able to do at Georgia. We're all very well aware of how well that went. I think that toughness matched with this energy and this excitement is going to do great things for a program that was already in a very solid position.
Yeah. And speaking on those transfers, I mean, getting to see the first scrimmage of this in the spring game, I got to say, man, a lot of those incoming guys I'm impressed with. First and foremost, I want to talk about the calves of Jordan Riley. That stood out to me first and foremost. This guy, and it's even more impressive, and it shouldn't be allowed, but he had the leg sleeves on, or the high socks, one of the two, in bright white, and it just made it that much scarier, man. I'm telling you, I was very, very impressed. And then shout out to Casey Rogers. As I was walking up the tunnel of Watson after the scrimmage, he gave me a shout out for the hair. So and he is another enormous dude. The guys we've included on the defensive front to go with the guys we already have is what really, really impressed me most in the transfer portal. And that's straight up Georgia football right there. If you have the bigger, faster players, you're going to be in better positions most of the time.
Well, exactly. You're going to be in better positions. And you mentioned it right there. You mentioned the guys along the line. Oregon brought in a pair of defensive linemen, both coming over, three defensive linemen, two of which came over from Nebraska with some of the coaches that Oregon was able to pluck from that program, as well as somebody coming down, learning that maybe there is a better existence than being out in the purple rain in Seattle all day long. Maybe there is just a golden green shiny place that you can go to just to live out that best life, and he sure seems to have found it here in Eugene, Oregon. Really excited to see what those guys can bring in, and I would love to hear more from you about what you saw specifically from those three.
Practice. Talkie was out there, dude. I was really impressed with all of the defensive front seven. Obviously, that right there is just probably going to be one of the most impressive units that we've had at Oregon in a long time. If they can go out, stay healthy, and play the way that I saw the talent on the field. The interesting thing for me was with all the number changes and stuff, it was so hard to keep track of people. But, you know, the guys that always stand out, Brandon Dorlis, you know, Swinston, you know, the guy I obviously most Duck fans are excited to finally see a bit more of, Justin Flo. I'm not going to say too much, but he verbally and in terms of going out there and making plays and letting his play speak before his words, man, that guy was so impressive to see in a practice. And you're just sitting there going, please let him get a full season. Please. Him and Noah out there are really, really exciting combination. And then TJ Johnson, man, what an absolute freak. And getting him to just take reps on the, you know, outside linebacker defensive end, that guy would be a pass rushing nightmare. He will collapse entire slide sides of the offensive line. You can bring in the center, guard, and tackle, and that's a guy that can literally penetrate right through that B gap and make life a living hell. So I'm excited for this team defensively, especially. And you know what? Transfers on the offense. Well, before we get to the offensive side, who's the cornerback we brought in from Colorado? Forget his name. But Gonzalez to go with Bridges, man. When you see those guys out there, you know, we've had some really, really talented corners and defensive backs. You know, I'm from the D-boy era, and dude, we haven't had them with this kind of physicality and size before. Our defensive backfield, I couldn't tell you that they were the defensive backs when they weren't to go work with position groups. A lot of those guys looked like linebackers. And one more guy before we go to the offensive side is Jeffrey Bossa, man. That guy is someone you can play multiple positions all over the field and make plays. So, you know, what I love on the defensive side of the football is you can tell Coach Lanning has a plan for integrating the talent we already have and bringing in a lot of the pieces he knew we'd probably need, especially when you get into November, December. So,
well, and the correct look, this might be an outrageous statement to make, and I realize this is where we do that, but would it be fair to say that with the influx of transfers, with the development they've had, with the time with Coach Lanning, a guy who has done great things with outside edge rushers and front sevens in general, is it possible that Oregon right now has a two deep, either of which is probably better than the majority of defensive lines we've seen, maybe not immediately recently, but over the majority of time?
Well, there's a lot of experience there that I think, you know, sometimes we've relied on guys that, you know, either don't have that much experience or have so much that they're almost taking away from other guys. I think we have really good balance right now that reminds me of the 2012 squad when you have, you know, Armstead and Buckner coming in and those guys are relief. And, you know, now NFL pros, multi-year NFL pros and top 100 NFL pros to be exact. That's a level that, you know, we could kind of see glimpses of as there were true freshmen coming in and playing on that side of the football. So I definitely agree. This is one of the best front seven rotations and defensive backfield. You know, even though we lost some guys early that, you know, we're now seeing with, you know, some cuts being made, probably should have stayed another year. And it would have been great. I'm really excited. And like, again, mentioning Gonzalez coming in, that's a guy right now that is immediately, you know, in a lot of people's minds, a front runner to be a first team Pac-12 guy. If he just, you know, does what he did at Colorado at a level at Oregon. I mean, man, that's impressive right there. But even on the offensive side of the football, I think we have so much talent right now that it immediately stuck out to me in the first scrimmage that it was just like, you know, definitely the Mario years. We saw that talent, especially at the offensive line, a lot of big guys walking by me, but I was starting to see that on the defensive line for, you know, a significant increase in just overall physicality up front. That's what I saw the big differences. And, you know, you don't need a ton of experience to play defensive line, obviously, but to pick up some of the complicated schemes, if you're going to be playing multiple fronts and multiple defenses, like Lanning plans to, man, you definitely have to have that experience. That's kind of the big difference. I think, you know, Aliotti's defenses were complicated, but we could work young guys in. But this, you really got to understand what everybody's trying to do on the field, and especially in the front seven, what your responsibilities are for, especially going against an offense like we now have installed from Kenny Dillingham, where you're trying to spread out the field, you're trying to exploit the edge, and, you know, hopefully a little bit more like we've seen in the Chip Kelly years, more than we did with a couple of those years where we're sitting there lined up in the pistol.
Well, Nick, you mentioned the offense and some of the guys we brought in there, and I definitely want to be able to get to that in just a moment. By the way, if you see me looking down at any point, I'm going through Oregon's roster over and over because there's many new names, as many new number changes as there are. Just being able to locate where everybody is, get through everything, make sure I've got all the names and numbers in order. We're still working on that. We had a conversation with a buddy of mine who spent a lot of time in the front row with me for a lot of years. And we always talked about there's nothing more fun than going into game one or two, having no idea who somebody is, then by game three or four, calling somebody a complete idiot for not knowing who that exact same person is. But I think at this moment, one thing that excites me so, so much is the running back position. I know that Oregon fans are sitting here saying, look, we lost CJ Verdell. He's taking his best shot at the NFL right now. Travis Dye is wearing gold and red, and I don't know how to feel about that, but good luck to him. We can say that much. But Oregon's running back position is going to be so fun to watch. It's incredibly intriguing. Between returners like Byron Cardwell, who we all know is probably going to be the lead back, and then the guy like Sean Dollars, who has spent time on the program, there are two incoming transfers who I am so, so excited about. First off, Noah Whittington looked great in the spring game. I've heard nothing but good things about how he's been working, about how he's been learning the offense, about how he's been a leader. And I am very excited to see what he's able to do coming over from Western Kentucky. The second player, Marquise Irving from Minnesota, I've seen his name on a couple of lists of the best transfers that you're going to see this year, the most unspoken of transfers you're going to see this year. This guy wearing number zero, both transfers that are wearing number zero, I think are going to represent it very, very well. And Christian Gonzalez on the defensive end, Marquise Irving on the offensive end. But I would love to hear what you've seen from that running back unit in your time.
From the scrimmage, I didn't get to see too much of, Mr. Cardwell. I think, it's pretty obvious you don't want to give him too many live carries because I think he could assert himself very easily as a number one. But from what I saw of the guys out there that got a lot of reps, man, there wasn't a lot of drop off, which is what you want to see at the running back level, not just in the carries, but when you're opening up more in the passing game, seeing those guys step up and being able to take on a blocker, know exactly who they have in comparison to who the offensive line is responsible for. That's a huge part of it. Just knowing who your responsibility is and then getting out there in the passing game and making something happen. You saw a little bit of it all with these guys, and I'm excited for all of them. I can't even say there's one specific standout just because it felt like consistently in the scrimmage that I saw, both teams were making a lot of plays, and it didn't seem to matter who the running back was. If the execution was there, the play was successful. And that's what you want to see from your running backs, because sometimes you need a running back that can get you out of a bad position. But if you're a good team and you have an experienced offensive line like the Oregon Ducks do, you really need guys that are just going to minimize your losses, get what they can get, and not turn the football over, which I think, man, if we can consistently get that this season, I would be very happy. And I think we're going to get more than that because a lot of these guys can break through for big runs.
Well, I think that's something that's going to be so fantastic to see about this Oregon team is it's loaded with talent. And Oregon teams have been loaded with talent. I don't know if we've started a season of this podcast going, I don't really know what Oregon's going to do from a talent perspective. That's never really been the concern. But I think at this point we're seeing a different kind of talent. We had guys before that could really play and we knew they could play and Oregon fans knew they could play. Now Oregon's getting people that the nation knows can play. Everybody's well aware. Perhaps there are some names that aren't household within the college football world yet, because realistically, if you look at this Oregon roster, the names that people who are big college football fans will know will be the Sewells, the Flows, the Bo Nix. But by the end of the season, the Byron Cardwells, the Dante Thorntons.
Mace Funes.
Exactly. There are so many guys with so much breakout potential on this team. And it takes us to the next segment, if you will, that I wanted to get to in our unsegmented kind of preview episode here. With so many young returning skill position guys who are going to be getting such a bigger role this season, who is somebody or a couple of guys at different positions that you think are going to take huge leaps this season?
Number one, got to talk about it because it's the biggest gap to fill. When you get a number one overall draft pick to the New York Giants, that means you have a big spot to fill. And Kayvon Thibodeau has left that. And we have filled that void with somebody that's going to step up. I got to believe it's DJ Johnson or Braden Swinson. One of those guys is going to step up and have a phenomenal year based on what we saw in the spring game, because man, there were a lot of times there were balls that should have been blown dead. Thankfully they were generous defensive ends and let the play get completed so we could see whether it be a completion, the quarterbacks get a little work, but there would have been a lot of sacks in that spring game if you were counting those guys off the edge, and it almost wasn't fair. They were getting off the count, the snap count better than the offensive line. And that first step, that is something you really can't coach. You can improve it a little bit, but there's guys that have it and don't have it. We have two guys at least right now that do definitely have it. Now, on the offensive side of the football, man, any one of the skinnies could end up taking over this season. But man, I don't know. I think the most important thing is going to be if we can establish the run game with Byron Cardwell all season. And anytime you have a reliable number 21 in the backfield, you feel pretty confident if you're an Oregon Ducks football team. So that's the key for me. If Byron Cardwell can have a breakout season for the offense, it doesn't matter who plays quarterback, which is obviously the big thing a lot of people are talking about. I think we'll have a really successful year and have a chance to be in the Pac-12 championship game, which this year won't be North and South. It'll be the two best teams. And, you know, thankfully, hopefully that's some way we could keep USC out of there if they do get a little bit close or get the edge on Utah. So looking a little bit far ahead there, but I do think the best way to have a successful season is to make sure number 21 on the offensive side of the football is up there in terms of, you know, one of the contenders for not just, you know, number one running back in the conference, but Doak Walker. If you can get him to that level and our offensive line can be able to establish the run that well with him as our RB1, it's going to be a great season. If it takes a little bit to establish the run game, if we have to rely too much in the air, while I'm very excited about our options, not just at wide receiver with the skinnies, but you know, multiple people at tight end that have come up that are young guys with a lot of talent, a lot of size. I'm really, really confident that if we trust our offensive line, keep them healthy, man, could be a big season for Byron Cardwell.
Well, and you just mentioned this offensive line, and I think something that maybe hasn't been mentioned as much as it should over the last couple of years, while Oregon has been very, very proficient running the football, has been that it's been with some of the very best offensive line play the University of Oregon has ever seen. I know that you guys were an extremely talented group, Nick, and there have been extremely talented groups throughout Oregon football, but you can't help but think, oh, what would a guy like Jonathan Stewart look like with these guys in front of him? What would a guy like Kenyon Barner be able to do with these guys in front of him? And it's always a fun question to have. I think this season, a guy like Byron Cardwell, who I've been banging the drum of since the middle of last season. You remember me getting on the phone and being like, dude, this dude, he's only getting reps at the end of these first couple of games, but he looks real. I've been about 21 for a while. I've been saying he's the next 21 for a reason. It's happening. This dude is going to be electric. He has that potential, and he has that potential while playing with a phenomenal group of offensive linemen. Guys like TJ Bass, guys like Alex Forsyth, guys like Ryan Walk, guys like Steven Jones, even the true freshman who I'm hearing is getting legitimate reps, and guys like Powers Johnson, who are just fantastic overall players. I'm so excited to see what this group does under a new coaching staff with the toughness and with the training that has already been ingrained in them.
Hey, let's not forget, you know, Sala out there, just a monster. Man, so one thing I do want to note, one of the guys that I am ashamed for not pointing out, but I, you know, offensive line never deserves credit until the end of the season, or, you know, and we just deserve praise when we give up sacks and penalties. So I don't want to jinx anything, but man, Josh Connerly impressed the shit out of me. And that had to, you know, that being taken into account, I saw this young man get reps at left tackle, a couple with the ones, where he is not just an incoming freshman, but someone that reclassified. And when I try to imagine myself trying to graduate a little early, go into the program in that 2007 season, oh my goodness, I would have been destroyed. Even coming in with a full summer ahead and going into fall camp thinking I had, you know, a good chance at getting into the two deep, the first time I lined up against Nick Reed, I immediately just, regardless of my athleticism, his speed and first step made me bail completely on my pass set and just basically turn around and become a revolving door for him to get to the quarterback. And he did that to a lot of people. But what was impressive about Connerly is he was going up against the guys we've talked about, like Swinson, DJ Johnson, and he was able to trust in his coaching and his pass sets. And man, while physically his stature, you could tell he was a freshman, he moved like a guy that had been playing there for 2 to 3 years, which is really impressive to see, especially along that offensive line with Jackson Powers Johnson, who already moves like a stud. A couple of other of those guys, you know, they could be playing on the other side of the ball, but, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson literally is. But Connerly is one of those athletes. And what I got to see of Iuli also looked really good. I mean, the offensive line is in good hands moving forward. And even though we have a lot of veterans out there that are contending for first, you know, all Pac-10 this season, man, or Pac-12, sorry, already adjusting to the future. We'll get to that. But man, I just am very, very excited for our offensive front, even though we had a couple guys move, leaving Mario, and, you know, that's understandable, but we've been kind of over recruiting the position for a while, and to snag Connerly as Lanning did, that is something I think we need to talk about with these newcomers and ending that recruiting class that obviously, you know, it looked really, really dark right there for certain points in December. Like, what are we going to do early signing day? And the way this staff was able to come together and completely neutralize any worries that we have and also start building on the next season's roster. I mean, man, it's impressive, and you expected some kind of a drop off in recruiting. I think some people are trying to project that, even though Oregon's never really been someone that gets commits, you know, in the summer right now. But I think honestly, like, we've just picked up on it. And if anything, we haven't seen these kind of early recruits, and you know, don't want to get too far into recruiting, but if you're able to get, you know, guys to, you know, some five-star guys in terms of quarterbacks and wide receivers, and then some guys that can, you know, reclassify to get in your program early, that's a great sign in terms of the relationships that your coaching staff is building as a new staff.
I could not agree with you more. And I think that this isn't a podcast where we get heavily into recruiting by any means whatsoever, but I do think that it is absolutely worth taking a look at that last class of guys that did just come in. I'm usually not a big fan of worrying about the person until they're wearing the green and yellow, but when they're wearing the green and yellow, that I'm paying attention for sure. Looking at this new class, there's a lot of guys who have obviously already made noise, have already been mentioned. You mentioned a guy like Connerly Jr., who I think is really has potential to have an impact early. I wouldn't at all be surprised to for sure see him at some point in those first three ball games, definitely making a difference. Now, one thing that has happened this season is Lanning hasn't put out a depth chart ahead of the season. A move that actually I don't really mind at all whatsoever. I think that's a fine move, especially going up against a coach who probably knows what he wants to do very, very well. So we'll have a much better idea of who's at all the positions, and we'll probably go over that more next week and give a more full version of it. But just from right now, from the spring game, from what we've seen through practice, it's already clear that Connelly's going to have an impact. Guys like Jahlil Tucker, Jahlil Florence, all these players that are newcomers to the Oregon program. You already mentioned Iuli, who is another guy along that offensive line who's going to be so impressive, and I expect to see early at some point. I think that what Lanning was able to do and kind of proved he was capable of doing was connecting with these guys quickly, being able to make the kind of relationship that you would want a coach to have with these recruits in this time period. So many guys that had been recruited by Mario, been recruited by the program, said the energy felt the same. I loved these coaches. They wanted me, and they've made me feel just as wanted as I had by Mario and by that staff at Oregon. That's why I wanted to stay. I'm glad to see that something like that is able to pay off. And I'm really looking forward to the start of this season to see how these guys are able to make an impact early. I was curious from you if you had anybody who you think, besides who you may have already mentioned, that you might have an early impact or is going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, well, before I get to that, and I have a couple more, obviously, that I haven't gotten to, but the one thing I want to emphasize is Lanning hasn't just connected with current players and upcoming players, but he's went out and connected with former players and had a you know, at the end of January, he had a Zoom call with a lot of former players. I got to ask one of the very first questions. Saw my buddy and former teammate Jeremiah Johnson on there, Jeff Mail. Bunch of guys were able to get up and ask a question. Obviously, I had to ask how he likes his steak cooked, and you know, the general other organ spaces nonsense that.
What'd he say?
Oh, medium rare, man. He knows what's up. He didn't just give that answer, but he talked about how he used to work at an Outback Steakhouse, and I just respected the man that much more after that. So.
Of course he did. Of course he did. I didn't know that, but of course he did. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can wrangle a free Bloomin' Onion out of that. But, man, if only I had NIL back in my day, man, I would have been the Bloomin' Onion champion. But back on subject, I just was really impressed with his ability to connect. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I could easily connect with Mario because we're football guys. We're offensive line. But if you're going to go and shake some guy's hand like you're trying to get in a jiu-jitsu match with him, if it's not someone that's 6'5 and 300 pounds, they're probably not going to appreciate it as much as I did. And Lanning's energy is really, really great. I got to, you know, meet him in person a little bit briefly after the spring game, just shake hands, and then after the first scrimmage. And just the energy he is able to transition to from off the football field to meeting people to doing media, that's something for his age. I mean, being just a couple years older than me, I am incredibly impressed with. And it's infectious. And, you know, that ability to relate at that age, you know, man, it's invaluable because you do see a lot of gaps with these coaches where, you know, sometimes it can be played up for humor. But we've seen in other programs where if you have this gap in communication and age, in this day and age, you can get outed really, really quick as, you know, maybe not a head coach, but especially position coaches. And you say the wrong thing in the wrong tone and people don't respond to it. You're in a bad situation. I'm really excited for this staff moving forward. And, you know, you have to expect some kind of attrition. People have to always try. If they're doing the best at their job, they're going to try and get higher levels of their job. So I know a lot of Duck fans are so used to these 30-year position coaches that I was used to and made me so happy about coming to Oregon. But we're probably not going to see that ever again in all of college football if you're a successful program. But the guys we do have here, I think we'll at least stick around long enough to see the fruits of their labor because we do have a young, energized staff. And because, I mean, man, the message that they've all had is so enthusiastic. When you started hearing the message from the previous coaching staff that started to get a little waning and, you know, kind of being repeating of the same old coaching speak when they first came in, were so energized to take over. And that's hard to see. But transitioning back to a couple more players I think are going to stand out is look especially in the special teams, not just for any particular player, but I expect our special teams overall to pick up a lot. We brought in transfers in the kicking game, which tells you a lot right there. I mean, that's not something that's, you know, I feel like was enough of an emphasis with the last team is trying to really raise the level of competition for punters and kickers and everybody that was on a special teams unit. Because as you saw against Utah, man, how important is special teams in those key situations where you shouldn't kick to somebody? And if you are going to kick to somebody, your coverage team should be prepared for where it's going to be placed. So I'm very excited. Coach Powledge, I believe, is running the special teams right now, but excited for what I saw in the special teams drills they were doing, how they were covering. Very excited for at least hopefully an improvement in special teams right there, because no one ever talks about it, but special teams have to be special for you to win football games. Those are the hidden yards that Coach Osborne used to teach us all about, that in the kicking game, man, you can end up getting so much better field position and end up putting your team in a better position to score or take the football away, put the other team in a bad position where they feel pressure and ultimately throw an interception or fumble. I mean, people don't look enough to those kind of hidden parts in the stat sheet that I think we're going to see a lot of benefits from of having Coach Lanning come in and kind of revitalize our attention detail on special teams.
Well, and something that you brought to the forefront right here is talking about Coach Lanning and how he's been able to connect. I would love to hear a little bit more if you were able to connect at all, or how much you've been able to learn about this new coaching staff as a whole. There are so many interesting guys who are coming in, so many people who are 100% going to bring a new kind of vibe to the program that I think is very good. By the way, Coach Joe Lorig is going to be taking care of special teams for the Ducks moving forward.
That's it.
You got Matt, you got Coach Pallage is working with coordinator for the defense and the safeties. But beyond those guys, there are so many names, whether it be Dillingham, whether it be Tosh, whether it be a coach like Coach Lachlan with the running backs, who have already made themselves kind of fan favorites in a way. Have you experienced any of that connection yourself with this new staff?
You know, I haven't been able to connect with them on an individual level, but obviously they've been very, most of them have been very visible in social media. And with Coach Clem, obviously I'm very excited as an offensive line guy to have someone coming over that, you know, obviously Mario gave so much of his attention, the offensive line pre-practice, during practice, you know, that it felt like, you know, Mirabal was not necessarily a full offensive line coach, but an assistant offensive line coach in my own opinion. And, you know, to see somebody that has the experience he has, and not just a UCLA, but the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, coaching a guy, Dane DeCastro, who came out of the same, you know, recruiting class I did, state of Washington, went to Stanford, tried to get him to go to Oregon, but hey, it all works out. And to see his level of getting these guys prepared, especially when I, you know, got, I go talk about Connerly and looking as good as he did, I can't imagine that's entirely just high school coaching and influence. His pass sets looked so crisp that you could tell that, you know, he had gotten a lot of reps, at least, you know, during that fall camp, to be able to be comfortable out there, just taking a casual three-step slide to like a, you know, a deep nine technique or a blitzer, and just not panicking, not bailing on your set in the you know, pass pro structure, and knowing that you're going to meet him at the right point of contact with patience and structure, and you're going to be in a much better position for it. I was really, really impressed with that. And then honestly, the energy of all these coaches is what I was really excited about. Sometimes you definitely felt that from, you know, Mario's teams, but it wasn't necessarily consistent position to position, but I think everybody on this coaching staff had their individual position groups ready to go. And, you know, whether that's me seeing a first scrimmage or whatnot, I think even in the spring game, it was kind of consistent. I think we really found, you know, Lanning found a staff that was very unique in terms of a lot of youth in certain positions, but a lot of experience, people he's known or been in coaching trees, he knows that he knows he can trust. And you could see the trust is now, you know, being passed down to the players. And for that to happen with a new coaching staff, an immediate turnover is very, very rare in college football. I don't think people understand the importance and rarity of that. And for if all the buy-in is there, which we will see, you know, not just this Saturday, but, you know, in the next couple Saturdays, it'll be really impressive with an entire new coaching staff, because we remember that Taggart year. It was up, it was down. It started with kickoff return for a touchdown, and we all thought, oh, it's going to be great. Let's just be swag surfing for the rest of forever, and how quickly things change. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how well we respond to going into hostile territory and trying to get a win against Coach Lanning's former team. But most of all, I'm just excited to see us get back out there, and the enthusiasm that young guys have that previously, you know, it was just a lot of rhetoric. It felt like a lot of, you know, I'm working, you know, trying to be my best every day is, you know, the Super Bowl type rhetoric. But no, under Lanning, like, he's told us flat out, like, there's improvements to be made. Everybody in practice can get better. You know, sometimes there's been too many turnovers. Sometimes the defense has been, you know, a little bit lackluster. But I think overall, guys are level-headed and excited, which is an interesting balance. And if they go into this game against Georgia, I think, what, 17.5 point underdogs, with that kind of chip on their shoulder, but the focus on their job at hand, I think we have a chance. I think we have a chance.
Well, and we'll get into breaking down this specific matchup here in just a few minutes. One last thing on this coaching staff that I do want to say is I've got a couple of questions and a couple of comments for you on this. One thing, the comment primarily, I love that with these coaches came the kind of – these coaches came to Oregon, and with them came players. People came because their coach left and went to Oregon. That means something. That means that these are the type of guys who can build relationships and who are the type of guys who really players want to play for. I mentioned Carlos Lachlan, the running back coach earlier, but he brought Whittingham with him from Western Kentucky, a guy who played really, really well there and is used to the type of running style that Lachlan looks for and the type that he trains. I'm really excited to see that, as well as, and I'm so sorry, coach, but Coach Tuiati, bringing on the defensive line, bringing in guys like Rogers and Riley, who are going to be big guys who, even if they don't start, will absolutely be plug and play type of guys throughout the season whenever we like our defensive turnover to occur, which, when Oregon's been its most successful, there's been a lot of substitution on the defensive end, whether it was with Alioti, whether it was under any other coaching staff, lots of substitution. Being able to bring in these kind of guys that trust their coaches so much feels so important. I would love to hear your thought on that. Secondly, something that I found very interesting was how Coach Lanning set up his staff. You've got basically two coaches who are filling each of the coordinator roles on each side of the ball. So you have both Dillingham and Junior Adams, who are both co-offensive coordinators, both of which I actually really do like the hires. I think what Dillingham's been able to do while having the reins of offenses has been impressive, and I think Junior Adams has proven to be able to produce very talented wide receivers. And I think that having the co-defensive coordinators between having Matt Powledge and then Tosh Lupoi is, again, bringing in two different perspectives, a more DB safety perspective with Powledge, and then you've got the front seven guy in Tosh coming together to make this defense. So the second question for you would be kind of what goes into that decision to have these two people co-manage these roles? What's the benefit and what's the downside, if there is one?
All right. Well, to the first question, and I want to just say and give a shout out to Coach Lachlan, like what a tremendous job he's done of his own research and how much, you know, he has praised Gary Campbell, you know, someone that is so invaluable to, you know, Oregon's program. Even like a lot of people love to talk about the Chip years. I love to talk about the Gary Campbell years, right? That's one of the things you have to think about when you're talking about the former Oregon staffs, is not just the head coaches, but man, Gary Campbell put a lot of 1,000-yard running backs out there, 20 something in his time of 30 years, which is incredible at any program, let alone the University of Oregon when you're competing in the Pac-10, Pac-12. But standouts and people that they've brought in, made connections with, I think we're going to see the whole team, man. I think that's the biggest thing, is that Lanning is about connection, in my opinion, so far. He is trying to get all these guys united that we saw at the end of last season, especially with how many guys departed that now are looking for jobs that had eligibility left. We're seeing that they left probably because they weren't connected with the team. And a big thing about him coming in, the guys he has brought in, is they've all connected. They've all gotten together. You can see it. They make it very obvious on social media, and not in like a, you know, like a way fans would be ashamed of, but these guys are having fellowship meetings over at Coach Lanning's house. I mean, I don't know what says more about teammates than that. And they've had to go through, you know, a hardship that we haven't experienced since I came in, and a couple of weeks after I'm in the program in the summer, Todd Doxey passed away in an accident. And rest in peace, Spencer Webb. And that was one of the hardest things that for a lot of these young men that they'll have to go through in their college career. And there'll be ups and downs on the football field, but there will be nothing that compares to losing a teammate. And Todd Doxey was a guy I met once, maybe twice on a recruiting visit. I you know, but it still impacted everybody so deeply, because that was someone, even if you just met them once, and like I've heard with Spencer, was so enthusiastic and so important to bringing the team together. And that if it were anybody other than Coach Lanning, I don't know how we would overcome it and be able to look at a football season as optimistically as we still do. Because Spencer was, you know, looking to be a huge part, you know, number one tight end, looking to be really, really good, important in the passing game. And beyond that, just a great guy that a lot of those guys felt like it was a true brother. Because anytime you were coming into the Oregon campus, that you heard that was a guy that was involved in your recruiting or getting you acclimated to the team. And man, everybody's response has just been so impressive from the coaching staff on down. And that just shows you that even though Lanning and a lot of his staff is pretty young, they're experienced and they care. And we aren't, I don't think we could be in better hands right now. You got to remind me of your second question, though. Now,
second question, when you've got two different people working each coordinator position, give me your thoughts on that.
Gotcha. So the way, you know, offensive and defensive staffs are usually divvied up is kind of in some, you know, like Coach Greatwood always had the run game coordinator role. And, you know, Helfrich in my time had the, you know, passing game coordinator. At the end of the day, your coaching staff needs to mesh together. You need to all make sure that everybody knows when you call this play, your position group is doing this. The other position group is knows you're doing this and vice versa, you know? And unfortunately, we had games that was off point. You know, a couple of those Boise State games definitely ring a bell in terms of not being able to communicate from an offensive line to a tight end group or running back group or a wide receiver group, letting them know who we were responsible for blocking in the run and pass game and versus what their responsibility was. So if you have just that cohesion between the coaches, that's the most important thing. Those titles, those are things for people to kind of debate about, you know, how much money are you getting, how much responsibility you're probably getting in the game planning. But overall, at the end of the day, it's all about, at least from the product we see on the field, it's about how do those people mesh together? Are they able to work together as a cohesive unit? Like you see in a lot of different jobs, you know, if you are able to rely on someone for something you might not have the full knowledge about, you don't have to spend that tremendous amount of time gaining all that knowledge. You can just trust that person to do their job. And just like on the football field, if you can do that to the best of your ability and trust someone else to do that to the best of their ability, you're going to get the best results. And I think we have a really, really good staff to try and kind of balance those things. But when you see someone like Junior Adams coming in, getting that kind of additional title, that's what brings you away from a UW, besides them being a complete mess all the time. But you see those titles added in there to either give people a little bit of a pay raise, longevity, or just a pat on the back for their contributions in terms of that overall mesh. And, you know, I think Lanning's already on top of it in terms of the people he's bringing in, given those roles to.
I think you're right about that. And the first question you answered, actually, you mentioned something that I thought was very important. It was how you mentioned that the guys that did transfer out of the program, they seemed to have transferred out because there was a lack of connection, because there was a lack of feeling at home within the program. I think something that was so important so early on was the, I don't want to call it recommitment because it wasn't necessarily that, but I will, the recommitment of Seven McGee.
Yeah.
The point that a guy who had for so long been an Oregon guy, but a Mario Cristobal Oregon guy. That was his dude. When he was a sophomore in high school visiting Oregon, putting on some of the coolest combos we've seen recruits put together, that was his thing. He loved that staff. He loved Oregon and he loved the team, but he loved that staff. So when they left, it was obviously a situation where he was going to be stuck in a tumultuous situation in terms of deciding what he wanted to do for him. The fact that this staff came in, Coach Lachlan, Coach Lanning, sat down with him and made him feel so needed, so at home, so important to the program, I think was absolutely huge. And we saw in that spring game what a guy like that is fully capable of when given the ability and the room to move how he wants to and how he needs to. I think that proved your point that this group of coaches is so good at making connections. It is so strong, not just in terms of bringing in guys, but making the guys that are here feel important, feel necessary. It is going to do huge things for this program. Excuse me, program moving forward. I'm very excited to see what it looks like. But Nick, we've been chatting for a long time about coaches. We've been chatting about incoming guys. It's meat and potatoes football time. It's time to talk about the dudes that you know are going to be the biggest names, the biggest providers on this football field this year. And after that, well, we just get into the fun part, breaking down Oregon versus Georgia.
Well, I'll keep it real quick. I think this season really relies on consistency. I've already said Byron Cardwell would be great, but one of the skinnies has to emerge. If we have a true leading receiver that is a wide receiver, a lot of us hoped Devin Williams would be that last year. And, you know, in terms of that wide receiver core, he was definitely the first guy Anthony Brown looked to. But what we need is someone, and maybe it's a group of guys, to establish themselves as consistent threats for this offense to be, you know, at least as unpredictable and meet its full expectations to keep that defense off the field as much as possible. While they're going to be very, very talented, you don't want them on the field for a long amount of time because you just increase that risk of injury. You increase that the number of reps. And, you know, while I'd love to see Justin Flo get 14 tackles a game, that would also be an indication that the offense for the other team is on the field far too much. So what I really think, besides breakout players, we just need to see a team that's more balanced on the offensive side of the football. We need to obviously open up the passing game more and more effectively. And then on the defensive side of the football, understand that we can run multiple fronts. We have multiple personnel groups that can go out there and create pressure. So play loose. We had too many times where, you know, the Ohio State game last year stands out to me so much. Guys shouldn't be looking down at the play call and the wristband on the defense side of the football. You should be clued into what your, you know, the offense is doing, where you line up, and you should already know. You should be reacting. You shouldn't be going and looking at your play sheet. So if we can see those kind of things, especially in week one, I'm excited. We'll get to that week one matchup here pretty soon, but I'm excited to know what you think.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Skinny's got to show up. The wide receivers specifically, I think this is going to be a year where, all right, look, let's be real. We all saw the spring game. We're all hearing the whispers. We're pretty certain number 10 is going to be not, maybe not under center, but behind center. It seems a lot like, and you don't have to, yeah, don't say anything you don't want to, but it definitely feels like Bo Nix is going to be the guy playing quarterback. And that is absolutely what it is. Is it your absolute best option in college football? Probably not. Is it the best guy to wear number 10 in the last 2 years? Definitely 3 years. Definitely not. But what I will say is it's a guy who has consistently played exciting football. Last season, 61% passer, 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He is capable of getting the ball out, is what I'm saying. He is somebody who will get the ball out to receivers. Maybe sometimes in a little wild of ways, but it should be able to get there a lot of the time. And I think this is a staff that will let him do that. And so because of that, I think that we will see a receiver emerge in a way that we might not have the last few years for Oregon.
Definitely. And I want to say so much more. I want to say everything to you guys that I really know I've seen in practices, especially on this quarterback battle. But I can say one thing with certainty. The guy I would have starting is me.
Absolutely.
Because anybody back there with this current talent group would feel pretty good about just chucking it up 20, 25 times a game. And maybe things go right. I could get some Heisman votes. If you had been there, you'd know. But I'm telling you.
In looking at this group, it's there are about 6 or 7 receivers that any of which I could say, yeah, that dude could definitely probably be a starter in the Pac-12, let alone like on this Oregon team. There are so many talented guys. I'd be kind of surprised to not see that first three kind of looking like Thornton, Franklin, and then McGee. Just it feels as if that's going to be the way it works out a little bit. But you also have Chase Cota, another transfer who came in, who's got plenty of experience. Josh Delgado's played a lot of games. Isaiah Breviard is a guy who we've heard of huge things about, and just that he redshirted last year, but he's completely capable. This Oregon team is
Hudson, again, Casper. I mean, yeah.
So many. There are. I mean, do you want me to read the entire list? I can read every single person listed.
And then we got, and we have Cota coming in. Yeah, it's one of the most impressive wide receiver rosters we've ever seen. That was
Hudson, the thing, another one. Yeah,
it stood out to me so much in the scrimmage that the DBs and wide receivers haven't been this talented at Oregon, and that's what we were saying the past couple of years with the offensive line and sometimes the defensive line. So, man, I'm telling you. If they have bought into the coaching as well as it seems they have with the level of talent we have, it should be a hell of a year.
Well, and again, you can look at that defensive backfield, look at those defensive backs all you want to. And again, you will see so many guys who have that talent level and experience. One thing that maybe was beneficial to Oregon having the injury issues in the secondary, specifically at safety that they had last season, is that there are now a number of guys with a lot of experience. Obviously, you mentioned Christian Gonzalez. He's going to be coming in. We know that Twardzik Bridges is probably going to be out at one side, but Dante Manning is still out there making plays. Jaleel Florence is a freshman, but he had an interception in the spring game. We know what he can probably bring immediately. Damon David played a lot of snaps last year, looked good while doing it. And oh yeah, the senior Bennett Williams definitely could be an all-conference player, maybe even an All-American if he plays the way that Oregon fans know he's really capable of. Don't forget he had a pick in, I believe, every single one of the games before he got injured this season.
Yeah, man. Before that injury, he was on fire.
Incredible.
One of those guys that, you know, picking up the number four in honor of Spencer, you definitely expect to see a big year out of him, all things considered. And I mean, just overall, I think the people that have been paying attention to this team see exactly what you're saying. And there's so many people to be excited about. It's going to be exciting to see how it plays out, who's able to go out there and make plays on game day, and especially going into Mercedes-Benz out there in Atlanta. Marcus Mariota coming out there as an honorary captain, but really going out there on what is even more of a road game than when I was out there playing LSU in the Cowboys stadium. I can only imagine, man. It's going to be so exciting for those guys, so exciting for the fans that are going out. I wish I was going out, but man, I there's a lot that can happen with that kind of pressure. I just want to keep people be mindful of that, because this is a new coaching staff, first time ever coaching head coach, a lot of new pieces, and you never know what can happen. And I think, you know, that's a lot of the reason that there is this 17 point spread right now.
I think the one thing that will be very interesting to see from these Oregon Ducks, and I think that it's something that even when Oregon played in its last big preseason matchup against Auburn back in 2019, I think that you still might see something that is a bit different with this team than that team. And it's that I feel as if almost every, if not every single person in that Oregon locker room feels that they should be playing in a game this big. I don't think they have a doubt about that. I don't think that this is a whole lot of imposter syndrome on this Oregon team. I think that these are guys who have known they were good for a very long time. And I don't mean good. I mean elite for a long time. You have guys who were recruited by the Georgias, by the Alabamas, the Michigans, the Ohio States. These are players who never once have thought that they weren't fit for how big a moment was. I don't know how many times in the past you might have had guys looking up at the lights and going, wow, this is a big stage. Maybe it happened, maybe it didn't, but I can almost guarantee that's not happening to the same degree with this team. I can expect them to feel, to fulfill the moment in that they know they deserve to be there. They deserve to be in that matchup. They deserve to be in that game. What happens in that game, we'll get to it in a minute, but I think that nobody feels as if they shouldn't be on the stage they're about to be on.
Yeah, Chip used to say it best, and I think we used to try and, you know, talk that identity up. Now we truly believe it. You don't come to Oregon to play in big games. You come to Oregon to win those big games. And we're getting closer and closer with the talent gap that we've been able to close to actually achieving that. But before we, you know, wrap this podcast up, give our predictions, I do want to give you a shout out, my friend, as a former Pit crew leader, congratulations on now finally, after however long, being a former Duck, right? It's been almost too long. I've milked it for all it's worth, getting to the student section as many times as I had, but congratulations, Sam, my friend. And I'm really happy to see you develop from beyond this college persona to whatever you do in your career and future. And I hope everybody that's out there, you are already following him, if not, at Samuel101TS, please. This guy is incredible. Everything he does in terms of radio, podcasting, all his media content, you need to follow him for. And hey, he's only going to bring you great stuff in the future.
Well, you're sweet, Nick, but I specifically told you don't make this about me. So we're going to have a conversation after this shit. Folks, we've got a huge game coming up this week. I don't know if anybody is aware, but the Oregon Ducks are about to, for all intents and purposes, go into the home of the defending national champs, the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, there are a lot of perspectives on this, and I can just simply set it up by saying this. Oregon is a very good football team. They are going into a hostile environment to play a very good football team. We can get into what's going to happen, Nick, but I can tell you this is a fantastically interesting game from so many perspectives. The Dan Lanning angle, the Oregon defense, the offensive line of the Ducks versus a new but still fantastic front seven of Georgia. There are so many places where this game is going to be fun to watch. I'd love to hear a couple of your huge points that you want to be able to look for in this game. And then, of course, how do you kind of see the game breaking down a little bit? We'll get to predictions at the end.
Well, man, I'm boring. I'm simple. I'm all about blocking up front. Are we getting matched up? Were we looking confused? Are we able to line up on guys? Are they any penetration from the defensive line that maybe just because of mental mistakes, mental errors on the off, you know, otherwise on the offensive side of the football? I just want to see a lack of turnovers and good decision making against a defense like Georgia's. Man, any potential turnover can end up in six the other way. So you have to be very, very mindful of that. But like, I'm very vanilla as an offensive lineman. I'm all about what are the keys? What do we figure out? What are the matchups? Who are the guys we got to worry about? But that's why I went on our Twitter account at Once a Duck. Hopefully you're following. And I asked what people were most excited to see. One response from at Aaron Camus: I am hoping and praying a return to Duck football, which he described as fast-paced, aggressive, fun-to-watch offense with a Dan Lanning lockdown, disruptive defense. And I think that, I mean, if we saw that, I think everybody would be pretty happy with that result.
I don't know what the complaint would be. I think that regardless of outcome, there are things you're looking for in this game. Obviously, every Duck fan wants to see Oregon come away with a victory, but I think that there's a lot to be said to How does whoever's playing quarterback, how do they look? How does this new stable of running backs look? Do these receivers look comfortable against really, really, again, really talented defensive backs? Outrageously talented defensive backs. Kelee Ringo's probably going to be a top 10 pick next year. Talented type of players that Georgia has. I would love to see that. And then the matchup that's been getting the media attention, I think it is worth mentioning here, of course, Georgia's front seven. Of course, some players missing from last year's defense that won a championship, but still an extremely talented group going up against this veteran Oregon offensive line, the young talent versus the old stable of veterans that are almost all of which probably NFL bound to some degree after this season. I think it'll be incredibly fun to watch that line of scrimmage matchup between these teams.
Definitely. And beyond the line of scrimmage, at K Cobrew says, running backs, linebackers, wide receivers, DBs. Seems like we're getting to those young guys we've been waiting to see perform as Ducks. The past few years have been the same group, pretty much a bunch of upperclassmen. Not anymore. We are hella talented. Hashtag go Ducks. And I agree with that sentiment a lot. But it is important, as you noted, the guys up front are going to be the reason those guys are going to be able to be successful if they are. One last one, which will be a great transition from us. At Nation Puddles says, our Ducks shocking the world and winning 28-24 is what they are most excited to see on Saturday. So that leads us into how we end most of these programs. And if you guys want to continue to see us ending the program this way, let us know down in the comments on Twitter, however you follow us, let us know, and let us know who you want to see as potential guests for this season. Cause we're about to send the invite out to everybody we've been thinking about, and we want your inputs. But man, Sam, here we are. It's been a long time. It's been a great episode. Great talking to you again. But we get to that difficult time. You could make a fool of yourself like we have for the past couple of Utah predictions, or you could be the guy that tells everyone exactly how they should be betting this weekend. Sam, what's your prediction for this Oregon-Georgia game in Atlanta this weekend?
Well, Nick, I'll give you two. I'll give you my Oregon-Georgia prediction, but then I'll give like a more full season outlook sort of prediction as well. Actually, let's do that first, because I think it'll be a little easier to give that first than get into the numbers of Georgia, right?
Gotcha.
I think that this Oregon team is incredibly talented, but there's always questions with the new coaching staff. And looking at the Pac-12, it's a conference that I just don't know how to feel about. I don't know how good or bad anybody is. I think that there's a chance that Oregon could run that Pac-12 table, go 9-0 for the first time out of any team to do it. But also, I think that it's not outside the realm of possibility for there to be two, even three losses there with some of the matchups Oregon has to play.
They have what's going to be a very tricky road game up at Washington State, going up against probably one of the most talented players the Washington State's ever been able to bring in a transfer type of way in their new quarterback. You have matchups against Washington and Utah in back-to-back weeks at home, immediately, which is followed by a road trip to Oregon State, a very much improved Oregon State team that I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to finish third or even second in the Pac-12 North. A very good team there. There are some tricky matchups, some pitfalls, some tough games. But I think overall, Oregon fans could be very satisfied and should be at least very content to say, hey, if we're able to get 9 or that 10 win mark again this year, that's a great place to be at. With a new staff, with everything going on, there will be unfortunate events almost guaranteed. How many college football teams ever go undefeated? You're wearing a shirt right now because the Ducks did it one time. It is extremely difficult to do, and I would never jump on here and say that without a doubt I think that would happen, but I think this is a very talented Oregon team, and I would not be surprised at all if I were to put that win marker up, it'd probably be around the 9.5 range. That feels probably about right for where this team will be at. But as for this game with Georgia, it's a matchup that I think will for sure be closer than a lot of the national media is saying. Perhaps not the game that some of the more, let's say, positive people of Duck Twitter would say that it would be. But I think that this will be absolutely intriguing. I think Oregon's defense is one of the best on the West Coast, if not the absolute best. I think that their offense is going to improve throughout the season exponentially as running backs get more reps, as receivers get more reps, as whoever's playing quarterback is able to play more there. I think that'll get better. For that reason, though, I think that we might see the offense maybe not reach the potential that we want to see it throughout the season in this Georgia game. I think that's almost guaranteed. It's almost guaranteed that a defense that's coached by Kirby Smart, that has the level of talent that they have, is going to make life difficult for Oregon, almost undoubtedly. I think that Georgia's offense is very strong. I think Stenson Bennett's a good quarterback. If Oregon's able to create pressure, there will for sure be issues. I don't trust him having to scramble or when the crap it's falling apart. But for a final score, and I'll say this, yet another episode where, and by yet, I mean, this is usually once a year, where I pray that I'm wrong. I'm praying that I'm wrong here because I see this as a learning experience and a great first outing for a new coaching staff that, although might not end in an outright victory, will be a victory in terms of what it means for the program and the steps forward that it'll take. My final score I'll give Georgia 27, Oregon 17 in a game that's closer than most think that it will be. I think that Oregon's defense is very strong, but George is able to make a couple of big plays over a couple of maybe more inexperienced guys. And then George's defense is as talented as people say it is. I think it will be difficult for Oregon to especially make things happen on the Georgia side of the field. It'll be a difficult matchup, but it'll be a learning experience for these Ducks.
I like that. At least you're honest. And me, I'm very fluid on the situation. You know, I've at multiple points seen this team and thought 7 wins would be great and thought 10 wins would be the floor. And so it's been a hard time for me to kind of like look at the talent of the roster, all the turnover, and especially how, like you said, how difficult the schedule is and try and make heads or tails of it. But I do think we are going to see with especially the quarterback turnover in the Pac-12 this year, there's going to be a lot of unexpected, at least like, you know, results in terms of where teams may be placed and where we're thinking they're at right now could be entirely different just based on quarterbacks. You know, everybody being really, really confident in Utah being really, really good in the South. It's, you know, as we've all seen in the early season, they've had limitations at the quarterback position and, you know, they think they have a guy, you know, come back ready to reload. And I'm interested to see that, especially in Autzen Stadium and going against them, especially, you know, lining up with the UW game the way it does. But thankfully, those are home games. Can feel a little bit more confident in that. I do think 9 wins is where I'm just feeling, but I'm not for certain on that. This week will tell me a lot. This week, I've been going back and forth, man. And I sit and I think, watching back the last season and Stetson Bennett's performance and just not being all that confident in if this is a team that's returning and does have, you know, a lot of turnover, but a lot of returning talent, and they've recruited in the elite levels of college football for many, many years. I don't know, man. I might be getting on the hype train a little bit. I see this, even though a lot of people expect it to be a high scoring game because it's early in the season. There might be mistakes on both sides. I kind of see this playing into a little bit of a 21-24 game. And I see the Oregon Ducks edging it out by a field goal. And I honestly don't see it until late. I think we might struggle early. We might get down double digits and then finally see this team start to click, distribute the ball, maybe a couple different, you know, changeups in terms of adjustments we make at halftime or in terms of guys we try to distribute the ball to more or less. I think something might click in Atlanta, and this, if it's not going to be with this staff, and you know, I don't know how we could have gone against Georgia and found a W in this situation with this roster. So I'm excited to see it. That's my current prediction. Keep following us all on Twitter so that you can keep up to date on that, just to make sure, because up to kickoff, man, I'm not going to feel certain about that. But right now, I really think we edge it out by about 3 points and in the 20s. So not solid on my score yet, but man, somewhere in that 21-24 range, or either that or 24-27. But I think the Ducks got it by a field goal.
Well, Nick, I think that'll definitely be a lot of fun to see. We'll learn so much from this week. I think we'll learn so much from the first 3 weeks of this season in general, going into, I don't want to call it a David versus Goliath matchup because the Oregon Ducks are 11th ranked, but going against the defending national champs, coming home for a FCS team that might not be at its most powerful right now, but has good history, especially in Autzen Stadium. And then a game that I do think will be the real test, the real, let's see what this team is made of, against a top 25 ranked BYU team week 3. But we'll get to all of that in the next episodes. Folks, thank you all so much for willing to check out the episode. We're so excited to be able to bring this fourth season back to you. I know I'm thrilled, Nick, to be able to see what Oregon football has coming this fall.
Hell yeah. And just for, you know, in terms of what to be looking forward to this season, again, let us know in the comments or on Twitter who you want to see as guests, because it's not always just going to be that we have this much to talk about week to week. We're going to need some guests on here, former Ducks that you want to see and you want to hear their input about this program and this new staff. We'd love to hear them, even if they're former guests that you want to go back and see us talk to again. Let us know and go back and check out our old episodes, because some of those are going to be even more relevant as I go back and listen with this new staff. It's going to be very, very funny to see how some of our opinions on Mario Cristobal age. But hey, man, about an hour and 16 minutes into it now with just us, I think we did pretty well, Sam. Congratulations.
You know what, Nick? Somebody had to be willing to take care of this. We are a nationally recognized podcast now, so you know we're going to have to be willing to bring something new for people every week. And I'm excited to talk some Duck football with you for the next 13 or so.
Yep. Shout out to Big Game Boomer and all our fans out there who already know, once a Duck, always a Duck. Thank you guys for tuning in and your constant support. And go ahead and always like, subscribe, retweet, any way you can share the show with your fellow Ducks and friends. Let us know. And always go ahead, reach out. Let us know what you want to see on future episodes.